Hello and welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the unceded homelands of the Mohican people, known today as the Stockbridge-Munsee community. I'm Sina Bazila-Hickey.
And I'm Kaelin McPherson. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, first, we talk with Marshall Hildreth. Nope, I did that in the wrong order. First, Marshall Hildreth talks about the VISTA program and who the program is geared towards. Then, roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry interviewed labor leader Mark Emanation. Later on, it's Mental Health Awareness Month. So, how do students handle their own mental health? We'll hear the answers in a Vox Pop segment. After that, well, we highlight a comedian. This week, we highlight Alana Gill. And finally, Tom Francis highlights poet Kathleen, Jessica Ree, and Kate Gilsip from Brass Tacks. But first, here are the headlines.
That is Marie Kathleen, Jessica Ree, and Kate Gillespie. The Times Union reports that the state will expand an emergency hiring program that could waive certain civil service examination requirements in order to boost a lagging state workforce. A pilot program last year hired 9,000 healthcare workers. The Office of Civil Service also plans to conduct an overhaul of the civil service apparatus in New York.
Waterville police arrested three juveniles in connection with an attack on a homeless man over the weekend. After videos of the assault circulated on social media, the victims were hospitalized after the attack. More arrests are expected.
The Gazette reports, with National Holocaust Remembrance Week underway, fundraising efforts to build a planned Capital District Holocaust Memorial in Niskayuna continue, with the organizers receiving a four-year extension with the Town Planning Board to build the memorial. The project, which began in August 2020, was delayed during the COVID epidemic.
The Schenectady Ethics Board has dismissed a complaint by Councilman Carl Williams against former Councilman John Polimeni. Contended that Polimeni served on the council while residing in Rotterdam. The board, which deals with the conflicts of interest, said the complaint was beyond their jurisdiction.
A Republican state Supreme Court judge in Livingston County found on Tuesday that state lawmakers had acted improperly when approving the Equal Rights Amendment, which would enshrine a variety of civil rights protections in the state constitution. The attorney general plans to appeal the decision to remove the proposal from the ballot this November.
The United States Appeals Court panel has dismissed the Juliana versus the United States lawsuit first filed by 21 young people who said the government's energy policies violates their right to be protected from climate change. The young plaintiffs had argued that the United States government enabled fossil fuel use and extraction while knowing these actions could cause catastrophic global warming, noting that the climate change jeopardizes their health and property through impacts like wildfires, floods, and storms. They said the U.S. energy policies that contributed to climate change violates their right to due process and equal protection under the United States Constitution.
The Times Union reports that more than 100 water sources in Shenandoah schools, from water fountains to kitchen sinks, have tested for high levels of lead, many of them way over. The results have been getting steadily worse over the last decade as the pipes degrade over time. It does not appear that the district has taken corrective action.
And that's it for your headlines.
For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, listener-supported radio that builds community in Troy and the surrounding capital region through broad, grassroots participation.
Our content is produced by volunteers for volunteers. To learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org. Email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org or call 518-272-2390.
AmeriCorps VISTA is a program that aims to address community challenges where the need is greatest. VISTA members are placed in service sites to learn valuable community and career skills. And to learn more about this program, I invited our VISTA member, Marshall Hildreth, to speak with me about this experience. Listeners, I have Marshall Hildreth sitting across from me here in the Sanctuary studio. Marshall is our volunteer coordinator, part of the VISTA program, and perhaps you're aware of the VISTA program, but some of you may not be, and so I wanted to get a little bit more familiar with this program. So welcome, Marshall.
Hello. Good to be back.
I think we talked a little bit about your VISTA program very early on, before you had really experienced it. So I'm excited to kind of check in with you. Also, even though I've known some VISTAs before, we had some VISTAs at the sanctuary back in like 09, I believe. I don't think I paid attention. And so I'm a lot more aware of what the VISTA program is. How would you describe the experience of being a VISTA?
It's a really good question. And honestly, I will replicate the answer that was first given to me when I started, was VISTA is what you make of it. And of course, hearing that before experiencing it, you go, yeah, sure. But it's very true. At least in my unique case, I think the sanctuary's VISTA position has given me a lot of freedom. And with that, I've been able to do a lot and develop a lot with my VISTA position. Whereas like other VISTAs in my cohort don't necessarily have that luxury. So really, it's what you make of it.
What were you looking for when you applied for the VISTA program?
Specifically, I was looking for experience within non-for-profits, whether that would be in, you know, volunteer management or more so on the back end of things, program development. Really, it was an alternative way to figure out if I wanted to finish my political science degree. Yeah, and lo and behold, I now have the answer to that. But my VISTA experience has definitely allowed me to experience more than just the answers I was looking for.
Did you have experience with volunteers coming in?
Not necessarily. I did have experience in like academic and community engagement a little bit, but more so on like a project-to-project basis and definitely in a more like collegiate setting. So this was my first grown-up position, if you will, to this caliber.
What was the experience like being in charge of the volunteer coordination? As from my point of view, it was like, hey, welcome, great, here it is, like, have at it.
Right.
While we gave you guidance, we also gave you a lot of freedom. So what was that experience like?
I would say baptism by fire, and I mean that yes. In the most loving way.
Yeah, you began in the fall when we were very overloaded with events.
Yes, that was a really kind of like figure it out, kid, good luck, but we have your back. And I think that approach was really informative. I know not everyone likes to learn that way, but personally, I find that to be the most useful. And overall, I think it was really interesting because not only do I get to work with like artists, different, you know, community members or even scientists, but I get to engage with the people who are boots on the ground living in the community each day who also have an interest in those people or what they're doing. And as a non-native to Troy, it was a really unique way to get to learn the city and get to learn like the subculture of Troy.
And in addition to coordinating the volunteers at the Sanctuary for Independent Media, there's more to being a VISTA. Could you explain the other parts of just kind of that work placement?
Yeah, so a VISTA is really an overall kind of life change, I would say. Volunteers in Service to America is what VISTA stands for. And really, not only are you developing capacity to alleviate poverty in different ways, but you also are doing that with other people in your area. So not every VISTA program does this, but through Siena College, which is the VISTA service site that I'm a part of, they have a cohort model. So each month we meet up, all of us VISTAs, and have team building days, learn from each other. We have something called Real Talk, which is just like a great way to vent or just to talk candidly about our experience. And these team building days are often themed. So we learn everything from like resume building, how to translate this position into like real world, like professional experience to, I think we just recently did like professional headshots, or we got to talk to someone from the Census Bureau. So it gives a lot more opportunity than like singular VISTA positions, which I have spoken with singular VISTAs, and it is definitely a 180, I will say.
Oh, okay. So is this program ideal for somebody who is emerging as a professional and has a skill set to kind of really go both feet in into a workplace, but is also still being supported with work development and those foundational skills getting into it?
Absolutely. I think that's mainly what the program is geared towards, but I will say, even if you're someone who has zero experience, it's still a great opportunity to get your foot in the door and learn, whether it be like by proxy or actually in the role that you might be seeking. I have fellow VISTAs that do everything from medical community engagement up in Saratoga to working on a farm with the food pantry, and then to me, who manages volunteers and does outreach. So a lot of us have different backgrounds. Not all of us necessarily were looking for the specific positions we ended up in. But again, it is what you make of it. So even if you're looking to professionally develop, but you don't get your site of choice, I still say go for it, because there is so much in the background that really informs you. And it's not directly what that job description or what we call a VAD might say that is what you're going to be doing or what you're going to be learning.
Is the yearly cycle always August to August? Does it vary? Is it not always a year long?
I started with around, I would say, five other VISTAs August to August. It was the second round of recruitment for Sienna. But my fellow conspirator, collaborator, my fellow VISTA at Sunhees, Haley, she joined us in January. So it is on a rolling basis. So I say keep an eye out if you're interested. Also, I didn't realize this, but technically I was a VISTA prior to this assignment as a summer research associate. So mm-hmm. that was still under the AmeriCorps umbrella and technically in a VISTA position, but that was only like a summer long type of role.
So you mentioned Sunhees. Yes. You have been collaborating with another VISTA. Could you talk about the networking and how that is allowed you to bring in your own project and also networking going forward?
Yeah, I kind of liken it to radio. If you're a producer, you'll know what I mean. But even if you're not, the beauty of being a volunteer radio producer, you now have this card or excuse to be like, hey, can I interview this person? Or I've always wanted a reason to go up to this person. Now I do. So as a VISTA, not only do you have that excuse within your network, you're like, hey, we're kind of doing similar things. How can we benefit each other? But someone always knows someone, and I forget where I heard it from, but you're always like 3 degrees away from someone.
Mm.
So I think that comes along with the sanctuary, though, as well. The sanctuary being in a very like special position within the community and having longstanding relationships with organizations. And then being this fresh face in a role of a VISTA, I think welcomes people to take a chance when networking and when collaborating.
So Marshall Hildreth, our VISTA volunteer coordinator, this has been great. And you have 90 days left with us.
Yes, 90.
90. So what are you going to do with these 90 days? Is there a vision for it, or are you just taking it day by day?
The grand vision is, with really any VISTA position, is to leave something sustainable behind, and the sanctuary going through some changes still. I do want to make sure I leave a nice care package, if you will, for the person who will take on some of my duties and make that transfer easy.
I will plug, you have been tabling and creating these formulas that makes it so much easier for us to pop up out in the community with these gorgeous tablecloths and literature and all of that. So
thank you.
That is one of the many things that I know that you are leaving us.
Yes. Yeah. It feels good to like see the actualization of all that work.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. And I know there are a couple opportunities for people to meet you, not only at the sanctuary, which mm-hmm. that is always an option. But you have a couple tabling events. So where can people find you?
Yeah, I would say keep an eye out on our socials. June is going to be a busy month. We will be at Collard City Pride, Glens Falls Pride, Albany Capital Pride, Schenectady Kids Art Festival, and a whole host of other little pop-ups. I try and be out in the community when I can, and sometimes those opportunities come at you fast. So I always say keep an eye out, and you never know when we're going to show up.
Thank you so much for talking with me, Marshall.
Thanks for having me. Always great to be on.
To learn more about the VISTA program, visit AMERICORPS or AmeriCorps.gov.
Next, roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry interviews Mark Emanation, executive director of the Capital District Area Labor Federation. Willie interviewed Mark about the positive and negative aspects of the labor movement in 2023 and his thoughts on what to look forward to in 2024.
Yeah, this is Willie Terry, a roaming labor correspondent for the Hustle and Mohawk Magazine Network. And I'm here today at the Labor Temple with the executive director of the Capital District Area Labor Federation, Mark Emanation. And how you doing, Mark?
Good, Willie. Great to see you. I'm doing fine.
Right. So, Mark, the last time we interviewed was last year. So right. We're in a new year now. But before I get into, you know, all the specific questions, can you give us a brief overview of Al and your role in it?
Yeah, the Capital District Area Labor Federation is over 120,000 union members, from teachers to plumbers to grocery workers to painters, everybody. And in the 11 counties, Albany, Rensselaer, Schenectady, Saratoga, Montgomery, Fulton, Schoharie, Warren, Washington, Hamilton, and Southern Essex counties. And so it's a huge geographic area. For instance, Hamilton County, which is a long ways away from here, 2.5 hours, there's 4,000 people live in Hamilton County. 400 of them are union members, and there are members. So my role is to try to do the best I can to, like, reach out to those 120,000, 27,000, to try to get them to work together in unity on issues of solidarity, and to support whatever they're doing. If they're doing an organizing drive, if they're doing if they're on strike, or they're preparing to go on strike, if they're in a contact battle like the Ellis Hospital nurses, Bellevue Hospital nurses, all of those things. That's what we do. We also put on a bunch of special events over the course of the year that are educational and protest-oriented, and we work with a lot of community groups to try to get the gospel of unionism out amongst working people all over the state.
Right. Okay. And mainly you work with the leadership of those Central Labor Councils.
Yes. We have 5 Central Labor Councils, and we work with the leadership of those Central Labor Councils, and we try to, if there's an election coming up that unions put forward, have a candidate that they're backing, we work on those election campaigns. Those kind of things.
Okay.
Get legislation passed.
Right, okay. So, Mark, like I said, we haven't talked since last year. And last year, during last year, labor was in the news a lot.
A lot, year. Yep.
So what I want to ask you, and what was some of labor movement positive and negative struggles or aspects in 2023? And I'm gonna ask you a question, but I'm gonna ask you in stages.
Okay.
Like, what was some of the negative and positive aspects of the labor movement on a national level?
Well, let's start with the positive.
Okay.
There was over 400 strikes last year, work stoppages nationwide, that won, for the most part, great concessions from the bosses, from the people that own these companies and run these companies.
Right.
And there was a bunch of other successful non-strikes, like the UPS Teamster battle. The Teamsters did practice picket lines that were enormous, and it put so much pressure and tons of community stuff, and it put so much pressure on UPS that UPS gave them a very good contract that was voted up in a big way by the Teamsters. So they avoided the strike, but they worked really, they got a good contract. And even the threat of it nowadays, sometimes you can get a good contract just even with the threat of it, because they see that working people and their unions are fed up with the conditions that we're facing. So, and then we also organized The FL-CIO's unions organized over 303,000 new members. So those are all like positive. The negative on the thing is that we still lost lots of members. There was like, you know, layoff, you know, like things shutting down, like ShopRite, and we lost 660 union jobs. College of St. Rose lost all those jobs. Mm-hmm. That's starting to trickle around the country where those things are done. Warrior Met, the big miner strike in Alabama, those guys lost. There's been other strikes, bakery, confectionery, tobacco, whatever, that union that had, you know, really strong strike, and they just went back to work with not getting a contract, saving the jobs. You know, you've had the positive of Starbucks, for instance, where they got, you know, they're fighting for a contract and they're getting there, but they're not there yet. And, you know, we see like the big, huge organizing drive that was done and successful at Albany Med. Now they're fighting for their second contract. They're, you know, they're in a mess. The Ellis Hospital nurses, the company offered them a 0% raise for the first year of the contract. Zero. Rent didn't go up zero. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get the PRO Act passed. So we're still fighting. We're still fighting, and that's the good news. And I think on the other thing, the other side of it, though, you know, you'd be foolish looking at how bad conditions are for working people and thinking that we're winning. We're fighting, which is a good thing.
Right.
But, you know, 68% of Americans, I just saw this the other day, that we have 813 billionaires in the United States that have $5.7 trillion worth of wealth, and 68% of families are living paycheck to paycheck. And the town that we live in, 25% of the population lives under the federal poverty level. And those are miserable conditions. And, you know, the thing that just happened in Baltimore, where the boat hit the bridge.
Yeah.
Well, for years now, they've been trying to get those protective things around the things that hold the bridge up, whatever, mm-hmm. that, you know, that go into the water, mm-hmm. that would avoid those accidents. The people that run that thing didn't allow them to do that, didn't spend the money to make that safe, hence this terrible accident that killed, you know, the six workers.
Right.
Those are immigrant workers who get treated terribly by the people that run this country. They're blamed for everything, the immigrant workers and migrants and stuff like that, so-called migrants or workers that came here to get a better life. So we got a lot of work to do. But the positive thing is, if you asked me these questions 10 years ago, the negatives would be there, but the fighting back and the strikes and the organizing, that wouldn't be there. 10 years ago, this wasn't happening.
Right. Well, that's the reason I asked you, because I wanted to get, you know, go back 2023 before I come to 2024.
Right.
You know, and you talked, I think you just talked about some of the stuff that's going on that was happening in the state
right.
and local. Is there any more, like, you know, in reference to the state and local level?
Well, so we got these three big hospital contracts coming up. Ellis, Bellevue, and Schenectady. Nathan LaTower out in Gloversville, mm-hmm. and Albany Med. We have a bunch of other contracts that are expiring coming up. We've got organizing drives here. Besides Starbucks, there's several that I know about that are hush-hush right at this moment, but they're going to be announced, you know, soon when they get enough cards and things. So those things are big things. And I can see it's my own observation of the union movement around here. There's more unity in it. Not on some tough, tricky issues, but on the bigger big questions. There's an action that we can. There's unity. You could see it even the other day, the noontime rally out in Schenectady at Bellevue, or Ellis Hospital. There's a lot of unions there at a noontime rally. There was lots of unions there. And elected officials, because all the unions are there, come out. And you know, it showed some strength.
Tune in again for part two of this discussion between Willie Terry and Mark Emanation.
For those of you just tuning in, I'm Sina Bazila Hickey.
And I'm Kale McPherson. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network on WOOCLP 105.3 FM Troy, WOOGLP 92.7 FM Troy, WOOSLP 98.9 FM Schenectady, WOOALP 106.9 FM Albany, and CAALP 107.3 FM Albany, and streaming online at mediasanctuary.org. This program comes from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York. Mental health is an integral part of college students' day-to-day life. 1 year ago, John Wallace spoke with RPI students on campus about mental health and how it plays a role in the lives of students.
John Wallace reporting with Hudson Mohawk Magazine. This segment is a Vox Pop on mental health. I went around the RPI Student Union and asked six different students and one professor three questions regarding mental health. Here are the responses. How do you look after your mental health?
I just take care of myself. A lot of self-care things. Go on walks, watch TV shows, take time for myself. That way I'm not stressed out.
I think the best way for me is to just make sure I'm not too overburdened with work. I really focus on making schedules every single day so I can plan around what I have to do and I can take breaks if I need to.
I try to think mindfully, and I also attend counseling every other week.
How do you look after your mental health?
I make sure I'm getting enough sleep, and I take time to disconnect from school for a little while, just to make sure I'm not overworking myself.
I look after my mental health in a few ways. I think it's about having some daily practices in your life that you do consistently, and then also having practices you can fall back on when your mental health is in kind of chaotic state.
I mainly just try to find ways to relax after I've had a stressful day, or like whenever I'm feeling overwhelmed, like playing video games or just listening to music. I find that really helps me whenever I'm feeling really bad.
How does mental health play a role in your life?
I would say that it's a big part of my life, with just like everyday struggles of mental health. It definitely is kind of always there.
I think it's really important because, especially if you're trying to do anything outside of school, you really need the motivation to be able to do it. And so making sure that you're in a good place mentally is the first step to doing that.
I think mental health is really important to me because I never really paid attention to it while I was growing up, even though I did have a lot of issues. So now that I'm in college and more kind of independent, I'm really paying a lot of attention to it now because it does affect my everyday life.
How does mental health play a role in your life?
It plays a huge role. I don't function very well in just everyday life. In day-to-day life, if my mental health is not well, so I try to take care of it as much as I can because it affects just about everything.
I think mental health definitely plays a role in my life when the rigor and stress is overloaded, which happens a lot at RPI. I think it's definitely a primary focus in making sure that I keep it in check.
I think when I was younger, it didn't really play a big role because I wasn't very aware of it. But as time progressed, I've been more aware and looked out after myself. Like, I've learned to recognize whenever I need to take a break from doing work or from doing any other activity that's overstrenuous to my brain. So I think it's helping me improve my overall, like, happiness or just how I view life and things like that.
Do you think mental health is stigmatized in society? Why or why not?
To an extent, I think it is, but I think something that like our generation is doing is destigmatizing it. I think with like the older generation and the people that are currently in power, it's one of those things that people don't want to talk about. But then I think our generation's breaking that.
I think it's certainly getting better, but it's something that it doesn't really feel natural to talk about in a lot of situations, and it really should be, I think.
I definitely think there's two sides of the coin, I guess. I'm not sure if that's the right term, but I think while in my circle, or like in the people that I surround myself with, it is a very positive thing. I also know there's like a kind of shameful aspect to seeking help, because there's this implication that there's something wrong with you if you seek help.
Do you think mental health is stigmatized in society? Why or why not?
I definitely think it used to be a lot more, but it's getting less and less now that people are talking about it. But I think it definitely used to be like people saw it as like a sign of weakness, so they didn't want to talk about it. But people are now, so that's a good thing.
I definitely think it's stigmatized to an extent, although I do see a lot of people kind of hopping on this kind of trend bandwagon of, oh, I want to be kind of in that subset too. But I definitely think actual mental health issues are definitely stigmatized and not understood well.
I agree. There's mental health, and then there's like mental illnesses too, which I feel a lot of people are not as comfortable talking about. But
yeah. I think it's kind of a mixed question. With definitely with the older generations, like our parents, it's definitely stigmatized because they view, at least in my experience, they view mental health or like mental issues as not a big thing, and that people should just go through life like ignoring it. But with our generation, the younger generation, like Gen Z, it's more accepted and more put into like awareness into the public, so that, because we're recognizing that it's a big issue, especially amongst like the younger generation now.
You just heard the different responses from a few random students at the RPI Student Union. Now let's get a perspective from a different generation. This is the response from a random professor. Please be aware that this professor is not a professional in the field of mental health. How do you look after your mental health?
I try to get enough sleep every night, at least 8 hours of good sleep. And I try doing some sort of exercise, like at least 30 minutes per day, every day, just to keep my anxiety at bay.
How does mental health play a role in your life?
It plays a big role in my life. When I was younger, I struggled with depression, which I still do to some extent, though I learned how to control it over time. But also, I'm a teacher here, so a lot of my students have mental health issues, and it's gotten worse over the pandemic, right, for obvious reasons. Because of the isolation and the anxiety, the pandemic anxiety, on top of the pressure from school.
Do you think mental health is stigmatized in society? Why or why not?
I think it is. I think it's framed wrongly in contemporary culture. We tend to frame mental health as a chemical problem, as something that goes wrong in your brain, so that you are somehow responsible for your mental health. Surely we're all responsible for our health in general, but with mental health, reducing it to the chemistry of the brain is a big problem, because that not only places the blame of depression — I'm using depression as an example, right? But we could think about other kinds of mental illness. When you place the blame of depression on the depressed, because of his or her brain chemistry, I think it mystifies the problem a great deal. It misses the target. I think that mental health should be looked at as a social problem, not as a personal, individualized problem, but something that we get into together.
This concludes our Vox Pop on Mental Health, conducted at the RPI Student Union. Until next time, John Wallace with Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Signing off.
And this piece is from our archives. So this is Mental Health Awareness Month. And last year, there was a student at RPI who created that Vox Pop from the RPI campus.
And now for our comedy highlight, we welcome Alana Gill onto the show. She is working on a new or being part of a new show that is promoted for the 18th. Tell us more about that.
Welcome. Welcome to Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. The show is May 18th. It is going to be a all not men comedy show featuring mostly ladies and a non-binary person that I'm very excited to hear the comedy from everybody. So it's going to be a great show. You guys should check out the at Albany Comedy Instagram if you haven't, and they'll have information for tickets and other shows as well.
So the comedy is generally dominated by men.
Yes.
By white men. Yes. What does having a space like this do for, you haven't been on the stage yet. What do you expect from the energy on stage? Does it feel like a safer place to bring out certain questions? And are you preparing different material than you would maybe in a different kind of space?
Yeah. I'm definitely excited for the audience because mostly like the audience that I've experienced is open mic audiences, which is mostly comics and mostly men. So already if they're comics, they're not going to laugh as easily as someone who's come to a comedy show like ready, like unaware of what jokes are going to happen kind of thing. And I guess I am going to prepare something different. I find that a lot of the jokes I make don't really land with that audience because it's very like male dominated. I have a bit that I've been working on about getting a pap smear and like where the history of the pap smear came from, and the last couple of times I've tried it, the few people who have been in the audience that were not comics, I asked like, do you know what a pap smear is, like to a man, and so far nobody said yes.
So. Isn't that incredible? I think I've heard that, or like, I don't know, the like how people don't really know a lot of this medical, I mean, necessity. Like, how, I mean, a pap smear is so normal, but so few, like, people like who don't get pap smears don't know what it is.
Exactly. And I'm like, I don't know, you have mothers, you have sisters, like somewhere along the line, like this is a test we have to get every 3 years. So like, where is this disconnect happening? Are we just like secretly going to the OBGYN and getting this very normal test? It's kind of funny, but I'm really excited to have like a larger audience with vaginas to hear that joke and to hopefully get it a little bit better than the normal man comic audience does.
Yeah, I'd be very interested to hear more about that.
Yeah.
So what, when we were talking about the pap smear, what are some other inspirations other than going and going to the gynecologist that inspire your comedy?
I really tend to like go for like things that are just kind of like make me like chuckle in life, or things that I find like, huh, that's kind of funny. And I like try and like go into like a bit about it. And I mean, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Like I tried for the first time the other night. I had been traveling recently, and I was thinking about when I saw somebody take a rotisserie chicken through airport security, and it ended up being on my plane.
I guess it's not liquid, so.
Yeah. Well, yep, that's what I thought. I was like, that's crazy, but it just popped out all fine, and she served it to her family on the plane.
Reminds me of like the people who bring an egg salad sandwich on the subway or clip their toenails on the subway. Like, just think of people who are around you.
And it's a lot of like that, like where I get my inspiration from is just like people doing silly things, or like I'm doing something silly and why did I do that? Let me break that down.
So in terms of your jokes, is your style of comedy more story-based, quick jokes, some other amalgamation of a comedy?
I think mine's a little bit more, I try to be a little more quick joke-ish. I don't find that I do storytelling comedy very well. I've tried it a bunch of times, but I never know like where the beats of the story and like the laughs are supposed to be.
And
like
the punchline.
Yeah.
So like, storytelling, like a slow build? Is that like a longer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like this thing happened to me, this, and then there's like a punchline at the end. And I'm like, I'm not good at like telling stories like that in general. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, here's this crazy thing that happened, the end. And like, I don't know, I'm a storyteller where like someone will be like, okay, well, what was the point of the story? I'm like, I don't know, it just happened. So I do try to like be a little bit more, I don't know, witty, I guess, with it. And yeah, I guess. So like the pap smear, going back to that one, I've been doing some research for it and kind of like going into, because it's named after the doctor, not named after HPV, which is what I and many other people thought that a pap smear is named off of. So like doing research and like finding other little bits to go in instead of my storytelling experience, I guess.
I think you mentioned earlier you're pretty new to comedy, right?
Yes, yes.
So like when did you just realize that like making jokes among friends translated to a possible stage?
Well, I'd liked being on stage. In college, I did improv. In high school, I did like theater and stuff. And a few of my friends from improv in college were doing comedy in the city, and it was inspiring to see them doing it. And it was something I'd always like wanted to try, but I was like, no, maybe I'll just find another like improv troupe. But I really was, I don't know, I had a point like in the last like year or two where I was like, if I don't at least just like try doing it, I'm gonna regret it. So and I had like, I don't know, something about like the year of being 25 where I was like, I need to like actually do what I want to do. So that kind of gave me the boost to actually try and do it, and I've been having a lot of fun, and everyone has been pretty welcoming for the most part, and it's a good environment.
How easy was it to get into?
I mean, like, they have open mic nights every day of the week. You just have to show up and go up and get your name on the list. But it is sort of like an odd environment. My friend and I were, like, doing it together for a while.
Oh, so it's a different dynamic.
Yeah, we were, like, oh, I don't want to go. Like, okay, I'll wait until you want to go next week.
Oh, so not together on stage.
Oh,
you were
yeah.
going together
yes.
and both individually.
Yes.
Got it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. We call each other emotional support friends.
I see. I thought it was like
comedy.
Maybe like two dope queens kind of like bouncing
yeah.
off one another.
Oh, that they did try to do that at one of the open mics, but
inspiration for the future.
Yeah, I think we should try it again. It could be good. But yeah, we were going together, and I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought here.
Sorry, I distracted with two dope queens, but you were talking about how you like how easy it was to get into the scene with your friend. You had an emotional support friend.
Yeah, and I mean, we were a little like scared off at first. We went to like one open mic night, and it was all men making some very questionable jokes.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Yeah.
So you weren't getting, it wasn't an all men audience.
No, yeah. I mean, we didn't even like go up that night to do any comedy. We just were like, let's feel the waters, and we did not like the waters of that particular open mic. So we went to a different one that there were more women attending, and it just was a more comfortable place because there were more women in the audience, and less when there's more women in the audience, they don't make as many of those kinds of jokes. I've noticed. It's like if you end up being like the only person there, you're like, oh boy, this is going to be one of those nights where they all try those jokes.
That could be an interesting like scientific study of like, all right, let's see how much I can push myself out of the comfort zone and like push them out of their comfort zone.
Yes. No, like,
because I feel like you bring up a pap smear and you get a lot of blushing from people who don't actually get them themselves.
I've been doing, like, working on the joke at open mics for a while, so I feel like a lot of them are kind of used to it. But definitely when I first brought it up, they were like, where is she going with this?
Yeah.
And I, like, explain what it is and as, like, part of the joke. And the other night when I did it, the guy in the audience was like, ew, ew. And I was like, buddy, you're gonna have to learn. It's part of being a woman, and you, I assume, like them. But yeah, so it's interesting when they have like a weird reaction, because a lot of times like other comics will come up and like do a reaction like work off of your bit into their joke. So someone actually did that with the pap smear joke because it did really well. And so I was a little bit proud that they took my bit and riffed off of it. So I was like, see, you guys are getting used to it now. You get it. It's not all weird. I don't know.
And the more we get women comics and non-binary comics up there, the easier it'll be.
Yes, exactly, exactly. That's why if they're interested, they should go to the Albany Comedy page and check out the show that's happening on May 18th.
Mm-hmm.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah. I don't remember if we talked about it on here or it was off mic. But you talked about how you had your family and you made jokes with your family. Did that play into your comedy?
Yeah, I think a little bit. I think I've realized I've tried to do like crowd work a little bit more, which is a little bit more like, I don't know, roasty-ish. And also like part of the like comedian culture is like, oh, we're going to roast each other. And I feel like I have experienced from that from my family and just like large family gatherings and someone's going to roast my cousin for being bald.
Families can be brutal.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So you kind of, they helped me get a thick skin for that kind of thing, but it's all like with love and jest and family.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm not trying to be really mean to any of these guys when I'm like roasting them. Not that I've done it amazingly, but
We have about 30 seconds left. I want to make sure we've mentioned the comedy page. What about your pages? How do we find you on social media?
Oh, yes. On Instagram, I am at LanaG97, no A, just A, just at LANNA97 on Instagram. And that's where you can find me. Or Alana Oliaga Gill on Facebook if you want to do that. But yeah.
And that event on the 18th. Where can they find more information? Where is that going to be?
That is going to be at Lark Tavern. You can find out more information on the Albany Comedy Instagram, at Albany Comedy. There's also their Facebook page, also Albany Comedy.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
This is awesome.
Thank you so much for coming. And our last segment, Tom Francis Shea's recordings of poets Marie Kathleen, Jessica Ray, and Kate Gillespie to the, they were performing on the Brass Tax stage at the Low Beat in Albany, New York.
When poets and writers walked into the Low Beat on Central Avenue in Albany on January 7th, 2020 for the Brass Tax open mic, no one could have imagined that that would be one of the last poetry events at that venue. In little over 2 months, the world would be shut down due to the COVID-19 pandemic. On that winter night, we were fortunate to have a room full of poets ready to share their work. Today, we're going to hear from three of those writers who took the stage: Marie Kathleen, Jessica Ray, and Kate Gillespie. Marie Kathleen was a new poet at the open mic and read two different poems, one about art and love, and the other dealing with depression.
This is I have a couple new poems. I'm a work of art, you're a work of art. We complement each other, but could each stand alone in our own gallery. I don't need you here next to me. You would also survive without me. If you understood art shows, you would know and accept that I can have admirers and not be a hoe. If I can have people close to me and not be all up in their art drawers. If you understood art sales, you'd know that a collection together is never forever. Pieces bought, sold, and shown in new places. If you understood art love, you know I can't stay when you press so close to me with your frame that my canvas breaks. But you'd also know that I continue to adore the work that you are, even from afar.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah, Marie.
Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. Depression keeps me humble. In my act of healing and growth, my soul was soothed, but my pride grew. I had already conquered the dark fog inside that blurred all perceptions and made my memory hazy. I was so proud of the way I got up every day to practice self-care and the way that I never indulged in the vices I used to. But even with all my health, all my spiritual wealth, I broke again. This time completely lost, but with the same forgetful mind and sleepy sullen soul as last time. But this time, I know I can't fix everything. This time I ride this torrent and sigh until the waves subside and I'm submerged in peace again. Depression keeps me humble. Thank you.
Yeah, Marie Kathleen! Marie Kathleen!
Jessica Ray was in town to visit during a college break and read two relationship poems, The Next Morning and Anywhere Else, full of rich details and wandering associations.
Last night, he was a giant marionette, arms outstretched, bobbing 90 to 45 degrees, right foot stomping so the wood floor winced, barking for all to hear F-word flying. She wakes to his arm weight over her bicep, his hips pressed tight against her ass. Their bodies fit perfectly, a pointless fact. Mana for novels, black tendrils flayed across the weary pillowcase, his serene eye closed, his face a cloudless lake. These poems she writes in the quiet alone while he sleeps, with sheets winding round his hulky leg, don't speak to him like T.S. Eliot's. When he wakes, he lights up a J, pours Carol Ann's in her coffee, and hands her his swollen copy of The Wasteland. Edges disappearing, corners dangling, coffee and rain marking his favorite pages. The words so plain and so mysterious. Smoke swirls to meet the panel ceiling.
And we're not waiting.
So this is another one, I guess. I don't know if you've heard it yet. I call this Anywhere Else. I'm getting the message that it needs work, but I'm gonna read it anyway. She holds a match to a cigarette. The phosphorescent afterglow fades to an iron cage, then pale phosphori. Her bloodshot eyes wrap around bundles of bronze oak leaves. Zinc dewdrops slide down the window panes of cars in the lot. The burr in her stomach reveals something about a man who kissed her on a dance floor by the lake. There was nothing else except the wind and the Canada geese honking in agreement. Then he kissed Mary Histrionic under a green Heineken lamp. Under eye sacs protrude from nights pining for something else. She's tired of idling with malcontent alley cats who bat her round like a plaything. She wanted to be anywhere else, like building a tiny yurt in Alaska with a brassy rooster perched atop and an herb garden below, or drawing one last breath over the last note of her surrealist opera in a Paris basement cafe, or playing cowbell, in a Latin ensemble with Giovanni Hidalgo and a blonde named Vera who pulled up on the lawn in a silver Trans Am one spring day. Why does she skip that audition? After dropping and mashing her American spirit with a twist down into deep lamps, deep leaves on the ground, stage fright, she takes the driver's seat in her gray station wagon, packed high with boxes, and leaves town.
And finally, Kate Gillespie read a found poem culled from Scientific Abstracts, and then another titled The Ballad of Lovecraft Country.
So yeah, actually I have a one science poem that's sort of inspired by, if you ever read science journals, they have abstracts, and abstracts actually are kind of fun. Maybe made fun, and I have a poem here. And something else is actually just kind of weird, so it shows kind of my range. So First off, I'd like to read you a poem, and it's sort of like a found poem from an abstract, and it's called Correction, Pathogenic Embryos. Genome editing, mutation correction, precise, CRISPR, Cas9, high homology, germline specific, double-stranded breaks predominantly repaired, genes modulating induced, achieve homogeneous, off-target, presented correction, complementing, pre-implantation, remains to be clinical, technique mutations. So this is actually called The Ballad of Lovecraft County. Okay. And I'm trying to read it with kind of a drawl, so just to put a little emphasis on it. So each time I told someone I was going to Kim's crit, I would get a funny look. She was neglected long enough to harbor maggots. It's always inherently life-threatening, more dangerous than suffocation. People who live in hibernation don't really exist anymore in the same sense. My firm recommendation is that you try to go. Around the city, the ghost ship fire has been an issue. Patrons enter alone and navigate dark despair. You get a story told by two undead mermaids with well-rehearsed roles after being shaken around in a moor cabinet. It's obvious that the entities are still working out things amongst themselves because they find our work compelling, radical, and urgent. It goes without saying that this city has numerous problems. The Manicus has proved to be a cancer. So while it was a trek to venture out to the newest location, we finally came up on the floodlights of the next haunting. It was a dark ride, groggy-eyed, glow-in-the-dark. Our bones began to ache. Being adult in this life will twist your arm completely around. When the man failed to put his gun down and started pointing, I had just the instant of a doubt. You don't come this far in a battle and give up. He jerked a thumb at the slit of light on the ground. My dad was killed, heading inside without an agenda. His song fades off in a casual howl.
Yeah.
Wow. For Hudson Mohawk Magazine, I'm Tom Francis.
And that was Talking with Poets, which airs every Tuesday and Wednesday morning, or you can listen to the full archive interview on our website, talkingwithpoetsmediasanctuary.org.
And that's our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Sina Bazila-Hickey.
And I'm Kaylin McPherson. Our engineer is me. We want to thank all of our volunteers who made today's episode possible. Sina Bazila-Hickey, Willie Terry, John Wallace, Brad Monkel, and Tom Francis. This is really a team effort.
Tune in weekdays at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to hear local news or stream Sanctuary Radio at mediasanctuary.org. Full episodes and individual stories are available on demand at our website and on your favorite podcast platform. And thanks to you, our listeners, for making this all worthwhile.